This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Lebanon, New Hampshire author Eric Schaller's debut collection of short stories features tales built on bizarre ideas. In one, a young man grows a tiny live version of the author Edgar Allan Poe. In another, a parasite crawls into the mouths of sleeping people who snore. And a man talks to the corpse of his dead wife about his belief in the body's ability to possibly repair and reanimate itself after death. The book is called Meet Me in the Middle of the Air, and Schaller joins me now to talk about it. Welcome.
Hello.
So this book, Meet Me in the Middle of the Air, that title actually comes from an old folk song, Ain't No Grave Gonna Hold My Body Down. Johnny Cash did a famous version of this song. What is it about this song that sort of inspired you to put a line from it on the collection?
Well, I like Americana music quite a bit, and that's something I tend to go back to and listen to again and again. And this was partially serendipity, is that I was trying to organize the collection, and then I'd gotten a five CD set of these old sort of gospel Americana songs, and Ain't No Grave was one of them, and I just responded very strongly when I first heard it. But also, even though it was really about the eternal aspects of the soul, in many ways you could take lines and repurpose them toward aspects of the collection.
Let's hear a sample of the song. This is Brother Claude Ely's song, Ain't No Grave Gonna Hold My Body Down.
There ain't no grave.
So that's a little bit from the folk song that gave the book this title. Lots of death in this book, but also a disturbing kind of life. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that disturbing kind of life. There's a story about a miniature Edgar Allan Poe, and there's also a miniature Marilyn Monroe in that story. There are robots that are meant to look like Oscar Wilde, and they kind of have a life of their own. For me, there's something more disturbing almost about these manifestations of life than there is about the gruesome deaths that you have in this book. I don't know how you felt about that.
Well, I think partially I respond, or things that disturb me have to do with false aspects and then trying to discern what's real behind them. And so partly that's what some of these stories get at. And as you say, the Oscar Wilde automata, to me, in some ways, they have semblance of life, but then you can sort of play against expectations of something that has more robotic movements. Although, again, I'm a big fan of Oscar Wilde. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why I introduced the Oscar Wilde automata into that story. As you say, then there's also the other story with these miniature sort of cloned versions of Edgar Allan Poe and Marilyn Monroe, which was the last story I think I wrote for the collection. And that was one where in some ways the humans are the bad guys because they're just sort of using these things as they would dolls and have a certain amorality to their own behavior. And then you're sort of getting a view of these petted creatures, the Poe and Marilyn Monroe, through their distorted version of how their world is.
Was Edgar Allan Poe an influence of yours?
He's a huge influence, and he's one that I think is so predominant in the U.S. one almost forgets about him often, because I think if there's even someone that almost everyone even knows their picture of an author, Poe is one of the first ones that comes to mind. And in the collection itself, toward the end, I partially wanted the story about Poe in it just because he was an influence. And I was also trying to get some of the range that comes with his collections. So often we think of very particular sort of horror stories of Poe's, but he often would have some science fiction aspects to some of his stories. There's some humorous stories that he tends to include. And I really like the range of what he does there. So there was partially very particularly trying to bring a little bit of Poe into the collection.
Mm-hmm. And Poe also was a poet. Do you ever dabble in poetry?
Did I ever dabble in poetry? The answer is actually yes.
Yeah.
Not that much anymore. I mean, I've...
Not on the back of a Denny's napkin as your
character sometimes? No, yeah. I do have, at least with the Three Familiars, a story about a witch, and she has three spells that she uses during the course of the story. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, those I wrote, and mm-hmm. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
These stories are sort of considered, I read somewhere online that they were considered sort of literary horror or horror with aspects of literary fiction. I was wondering how you felt about that designation.
I'm fine with it. I mean, I think there's different currents that have led to how people perceive what's called horror. In terms of, there's often more negative connotations. It went through a boom back several decades ago, and now sort of people see horror as something that should scare you. But in general, I'd say most authors tend to have a much broader view where it really is having to do with something strange, disturbing, and it doesn't actually scare you, but it sort of makes you rethink what's out there and what bothers you, what sort of gets at the sort of inner core of your emotions.
So what bothers you?
Many things. I think one of the funny things was once Stephen King was asked, so why do you write horror? And he says, many things bother me or scare me. and I say partially, I say the collection does deal with sort of hidden aspects and then trying to uncover what those hidden aspects are, and sometimes what you don't see can hurt you.
Mm-hmm. I think Stephen King mentioned that, right? Like, it's not so much the demon that scares you, it's the fact that you can't see the demon, but you have a sense that he's out there around the corner somewhere.
Yes, very much so. In terms of even with, I say, horror fiction, where often you have to sort of set up a sense that there is something out there that is going to come after you or do something to you, although you don't necessarily know how it's going to work out for the character. So the reader then is sort of saying, okay, what's going to happen next? Is this person going to have something happen? And again, it sort of has to be sort of set up so you know that something should happen, but you don't know necessarily where it's going to go.
You teach biology at Dartmouth College.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
How does your knowledge of biology and your teaching of biology influence or affect what you write?
There's some direct aspects, and then there's indirect aspects, I would say. And most of the direct aspects are smaller aspects of stories, I would say. So, for example, the parasite, which you mentioned in terms that sort of takes up with snoring people, came directly from reading a book about parasites. And so then sort of extrapolating to a new situation. There's other smaller aspects. There's one story in there called Hemoglobin. Mm-hmm. And that came via a Japanese print, but it particularly came from also my knowing that there's different kinds of hemoglobin in blood, depending if it's a fetal hemoglobin or adult hemoglobin. And so that then gave me an entry point to trying to do something different with this Japanese folktale.
How do you know when an idea that you have is good enough to warrant a short story?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
It's one of these cases often where will I be willing to spend the time working on this idea? And I would say when I was first writing fiction, it took me much longer often. So then an idea would really have to hit me hard enough to sort of keep going back and going through revision processes. Nowadays, I'm a little bit faster. I mean, some stories come easily, some still take a lot of work, a lot of editing, throwing out parts, recreating them. And so there's, I'd say, certainly many stories that are partly done, many stories I'll never go back to finishing because I've lost interest in them. But again, some stories just sort of hit you, find right voice right away, and those are actually more or less like gifts then. But it's usually, yeah, does it work well enough for long enough to hold me?
Well, Eric, thank you very much for coming in and speaking about your book.
Well, thank you very much for having me. This has been excellent.
That's Eric Schaller. He's the author of the new collection of short stories, Meet Me in the Middle of the Air. And you can find a list of the top five books on Eric's bookshelf at nhpr.org. Listeners to this segment may remember that we often feature reading recommendations from listeners. This week, we've got a reading recommendation from Cordelia Zars. She's NHPR's new All Things Considered intern, and she joins me now. Welcome, Cordelia.
Thank you.
So, Cordelia, what should people be taking to the beach with them this summer?
Unbroken.
By whom?
Laura Hillenbrand.
Okay, and why did you choose this one?
It's probably one of the best books I've ever read. It was difficult to put down at any point, and it traces the story of Louis Zamperini, who was an Olympic runner, and he got drafted into fighting in World War II, and his story is just an incredible triumph of the human will and the human body, and everybody should read it.
Unbroken by Laura Hillenbrand. Thank you very much for that recommendation, Cordelia.
You're welcome.
And you can send in your recommendations. Send it by email. The email address is books@nhpr.org, or you can tweet us at NHPR Bookshelf. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.